Welcome. I am William Evans, and you are listening to a Living World Conversation. Our guest today is Deanna Janay, returning for a second program. She's from Grand Junction in Mesa, is familiar with Carbondale. Thank you for coming back again, Deanna.
Thank you, Will. It's my pleasure. I always enjoy speaking with you.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. What have you learned from the experiences that started 40 years ago on the mountain that was really a painful awakening in many ways? What would you say you're doing now?
You know, the moment that I heard the voice say you have work to do sent me on a journey. And it's not, what I'm doing now is not unlike that moment of you have work to do. I continually hear that voice. And in fact, I've actually gone back to that mountain a couple of times to ask if I've completed my work. And dreaming there on the mountain, the voice that I've heard is, no, go home. You have work to do. So what is my work? I think my work is really about listening to the soul, listening to that, the matrix of who we are, and following my heart. And in doing that, that's the work that I do to help people, is to help them trust their heart. Trust their heart knowing. I feel the heart is the voice or the messenger, along with injuries and illness and things like that. But the heart is the messenger of the soul, trying to guide us and show us which direction to go in. That feels really important to me, to help people come to a place of trusting enough in themselves to listen to that voice.
You've also said to me that you learned about soul from fire.
Oh, yes. Well, I was given an initiation into working with the soul, you know, after death, but also I was given an initiation into working, to understanding the complexity, you might say, of how the soul is made up, what elements make the soul up, and how it comes into our physical being and how it presents in the world. And I learned that from fire, from the element of fire is the heart. And it's not like I'm self-taught, but I was given instructions on how to work with the soul in several different ways.
Can you say more about that?
About the fire part or about the soul itself?
Both.
I'd like to talk.
Both. Okay. Start with fire and connect it with soul.
Well, I've had a teacher that for many years that was not the embodiment of fire, but fire coming through that teacher, sort of, you might say, like an oracle, who taught a lot of deep spiritual lessons. This particular teaching actually comes from the Nahuatl tradition of Mexico and was given to me in a way that I had to go through an initiation in order to be able to work with the soul with people. So I'll just talk a little bit about the makeup of the soul. It's very fascinating to me how they see soul. And we don't even call it soul, actually. We call it Tonali, which is the Nahua word. And the reason why I call it Tonali is because soul has, you might say, somewhat of a limited view from the traditions that most of us grew up in. So the vastness of this soul configuration has to do with the place of creation. And the place of creation is called the blue place. In the language, it's called Munarita. That blue place is the place of everything, where everything comes from. And the soul is sung, and each song, there's six songs, and each of the songs make up the soul. So the soul is made up of the song of essence. The soul is made up of the song of light. The soul is made up of the song of darkness. The soul is made up of the song of emptiness. The soul is made up of the song of fullness. And the soul is made up of the song of form. So I work with those six elements, and they're called pre-elemental deities. They're pre-elemental energies. They're before fire, water, earth, mineral, wood. And there's a way of actually seeing how the soul manifests in a person's body. So there's the invisible soul that is always speaking to us through the heart. Sometimes the heart's quiet, but usually is having something to say about something. And then there's the physical body that also, it is the manifestation of those six pre-elemental energies. And those six pre-elemental energies can be lacking, or there can be too much. And so the work that I do is to look, listen, feel, and sense how a person is out of balance, and they may need what we would call in modern day terms a soul retrieval, or reactivating some of that energy, or balancing that energy so that there's not too much emptiness. You know, people who are sometimes gathering so much in the material world have a sense of emptiness. They could never be filled, never feel full. And so there could be too much of that energy of emptiness. So when that's treated, people's lives change. So that's one way that I work with the soul.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sony Reyna, a Yaqui Comanche man, told me that when he looked into fire, he saw the magnificence of his soul.
Well, the beauty of fire is that fire can teach us anything and everything. But fire is a great connector in the world. It connects all of us. You know, when you sit with a candle and you pray, you can know that your prayers are being sent to where they need to be sent to. And you may not know where those prayers need to go, but they are being sent. And that's the job, you might say, of fire, is to show us our magnificence, and show us our beauty, and show us and help us to make connections. And as human beings, fire is the most natural element that we have, and it's that great desire to be connected with others and to be connected with ourselves. So you could say that fire equals connection. And so, of course, our souls are magnificent. I mean, they come from the great place of creation.
What can you tell us about your relationship with source water?
I have a few stories about source water. Water is, of course, in so many traditions, is the feminine. And water is the wife of fire. So bringing those two together. So we have this relationship with water and fire. And of course, if a fire doesn't have enough water, it will be out of control. And if it has too much water, it will go out. The fire in our bodies will go out. So water is really a sort of a controlling factor for the energy of fire. And one of my closest, dearest stories about water is when I became very fearful, and water is about fear. If you have too much water, you'll drown, and it can create fear. I became very fearful of the land that I was living on being explored for oil and gas and the potential for fracking and the potential for the waters to be polluted. And I did a lot of research back in those days. That was in 2013, about what fracking can do to the water table. And this is on the Grand Mesa. And of course, there is that going on there. But not in my neighborhood syndrome, I thought, I need to do something. I need to help the water. I need to do something. I don't know what to do. So I went to the water and I listened. I told the water the dilemma that I felt we were all in, and sat and listened. And the water told me that if we don't give gratitude, if we don't respect the depths of the waters and who water is, the source of life, water gets depressed, just like humans get depressed. And the water told me that it could take care of itself, but it needed our help, that as human beings, we have a very intricate role with all the elements, and in this case with water, a very intricate role of reciprocity. And that's one of the tenets of being a human being, is reciprocal relationship with all beings. And to just simply give gratitude to the water wakes the water up out of a depressed state, you might say. And the water told me that it can take care of itself, and it will. It will rise up and it will do something. It is a living being. It's not like a living being. It is a living being. And it has the power to rise up and make changes. So I coined that sacred activism, going out and making relationships with the waters where I live. And in that way, the waters can receive the energy from us as human beings to stand up for itself. And fracking went away. I mean, all the potential of that happening in my neighborhood didn't happen. So I think it worked. So I have a deep respect for water. I know it's the life-giving waters. Water is, there's only 2% of all the waters in the world that is potable, and water is ancient. So the water you're drinking today comes from the source that is so ancient, and it made its way to your tap. It's quite a remarkable gift that we receive.
So the drilling activity pulled out of Mesa.
Yes. And that at that time, it did.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And out of my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a powerful story.
Yes, it is a powerful story, and it's very easy. It's an easy way to do activism, where you're not fighting, but you're giving, you're being in a reciprocal relationship, which is one of the reasons we're here as human beings, is to reciprocate and give gratitude.
Yeah, it's called an equitable exchange.
Exactly. Exactly.
This is KDNK, and you're listening to A Second Conversation with Deanna Janae. Tell us about your relationship with the plants and trees and the breath of the Holy Spirit.
Yes, well, the breath of the Holy Spirit. I see the breath of the Holy Spirit as being the movement, the fire that moves in our bodies. And it is the spirit that informs us. It is the heart. And I remember growing up as a little girl, the Sacred Heart of Jesus was always in my grandmother's home, and I always wondered what that was. And as I became an adult and began to learn about Holy Spirit, I realized that for me, the Holy Spirit is that spirit that runs through all of us. And it runs through the plants, it runs through the trees, everything is alive. And to me, that's the Holy Spirit, is the livingness of all of everything, the rocks, the waters, the mountains, the sky, the clouds, everything.
And then if you'd be so kind, talk to us about your relationship with the earth.
Well, I'm an animist. And so the earth is a living being, and she's always talking to us. And, you know, right now, the earth, the weather, they all work together to bring forth this living for, you know, animals, plants, humans. I mean, it's quite a remarkable planet that we live on, because we are able to live on this planet. It's extraordinary, really. And she really does take care of us. And so my relationship with her is giving her thanks. It's really quite simple. It's all my relations in the Lakota tradition, all traditions. There's always the prayers of gratitude and walking in beauty, you know, not bringing beauty, but acknowledging the beauty all around us. And as we acknowledge the beauty in front of us and behind us, the beauty above us and beauty below us, and the beauty to each side of us, it changes how we walk in the world and how we relate to all the gifts that our mother, our earth, has for us. And not gifts as in extraction and just taking, but gifts that can sustain our lives. And I hear a lot of young people, especially today, I'm so happy about this, wanting to live a sustainable life. And that sustainability to me has so much to do with gratitude and thanking her for this beautiful land that we call home.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what have you learned about moving with your soul through change?
Well, moving through your soul with change tells me that, talks to me about the seasons of life, the seasons of, you know, just the seasons, spring, fall, summer, winter, you know, those seasons, and that circular kind of living. But it also talks to me about how we change and grow from a baby, you know, transitioning into an adolescent, into a young adult, into adulthood, into elderhood, and then into our final years. And so there's always change going on. And we live in a time of, I mean, we live in cycles. I think change is very difficult when you just think of life in a linear fashion. And because there are natural changes that are going on all the time. There's birth, there's sustenance, there's sustaining life, and then there's death. And so those cycles happen in very small little circles, and they happen in big circles. And so there's always change. Change is what is going to happen in life.
And the soul is the continuity.
Soul keeps you in a container, you might say. Yeah, continuity. It keeps you in a container to sustain and to, we could use the metaphor of rolling with the changes. Yeah. And I think also from my experience and doing funerary rites, when I actually have the privilege of seeing a person's soul and how it's made up, the soul will express itself at different times. It's not a complete 100% expression at the beginning of life, as we know. We watch a baby grow into adult and into elderhood. And so the soul has different times, like these initiations that I talked about last time in our last conversation. These initiations are like catalytic converters, you might say. You know, it switches on latent energy that is already in the soul as destiny, but not time yet for it to come forth. And it's sort of like putting a little match to a smoldering fire, you might say, and all of a sudden it just lights up. It just lights everything on fire. All the wood is fully expressing itself with fire. It's kind of like that. The soul will have these natural times, these transition times, these, we call them rites of passage times, where the soul needs to be activated by a ritual, or sometimes it's a natural phenomena that happens that activates this next part of our soul expression.
Seems to me like if we were in a transition, a perhaps purification, our soul would be our best friend in that trip.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, soul doesn't have fear. And I think fear can be our worst enemy. It can be what keeps us from really wanting to make that transition. And tapping into the soul is that, you know, I talked about that last time, about the trust, the level of trust that we have in ourselves. If we know ourselves, we trust ourselves.
Well, and in my experience, if it's really fear that's talking to me, it's a motivator. And I need to get out of the street, perhaps, because there's a big truck coming.
Right.
But you're right. Unnecessary fear or manufactured fear is a distraction from being present.
Absolutely.
To this moment.
Yeah, I see fear. There are two kinds of fear. There's instinctual fear, which is natural, and we see that in animals very clearly. There's instinctual fear, which is survival fear, which is important. We can't get rid of all fear, but there's also fear that the mind conjures. You know, the anxieties, the undigested past. You know, a lot of times anxiety has a lot to do with something from the past informing the future, and it's not being in the present moment. And that creates fear that keeps us, it can freeze us.
Right.
Yeah. Last night, I was talking to somebody about the state of the world and how people really aren't very interested in the soul right now. They're more interested in survival. And I've been thinking about that and thinking about doing a deep dive into the soul could be your survival.
I agree. Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you, Will. It's a pleasure.
This is KDNK, and you've been listening to a second conversation with Deanna Janae. Thank you for listening.
One heart.